Welcome one, welcome all, welcome to another exciting episode of Tales of Citizens right here in the Sound Strategy Network. I am Bridger. We are glad you got a hold of the program, however you may have found it. Hope you tell a friend or two about the podcast if you enjoy it. Today we are going over quite a bit of stuff from the last month or so. We're coming real close to 3.0, maybe by the next time we talk, which actually, now that we think of it, should point that out. It's going to be, again, the last Sunday of the month of July. Every last Sunday, we do this show live, 7 p.m. on the channel for Sound Strategy Network, which is also known as Bridger on YouTube. You can do that there. You can search that there, or you can search on twitch.tv/Bridger15 at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Let's go! Calithulu, welcome to the show, sir.
Here, unfortunately, Gray will not be able to join us. He is enjoying a vacation, which frankly he hasn't earned and shouldn't be on, but very well. If he's going to slack off like this, I guess we have to accept it.
Yeah, it is what it is, you know? also, what is that, unfortunately, Callie's got a transformer in his closet that's trying to get out. No, that's actually a 3D printer. So
it is.
It's on a very important long print job that we cannot pause or stop. Is it me, or should those maybe come with a pause function, or will that prevent it from working?
Let me explain why you don't or can't pause it without some serious work being put into it. The print head has to get very hot. In this case, with the material it's working with, 180 degrees Celsius. So in order to pause, it would have to cool down the print head, then reheat it, find out where it left off in 3D space. Because if you just leave it sitting there 180 degrees, it will melt whatever it's near, and you'll have a busted print job. And that is why you cannot pause a 3D print job. However, that said, I can think of ways in which you could build a pause algorithm where it stops printing, lifts the printhead away, cools it down, reheats it to 180 when you resume the pause, and then it left off where it was in 3D space from where the printhead moved to, and then just for love of God, don't actually cancel the print job. Thank you, Teaser CA. I am glad you heard the pre-show comments about me slipping Bumblebee a roofie. That is, in fact, what this is. The 3D print thing is all just a big smokescreen we're throwing out there so that you're not aware of what's actually happening in my room.
Yeah, sounds good. So anyway, we will jump right into it here. If you have any questions or topics related to Star Citizen that you'd like to hear us discuss, go ahead and send them to us, feedback@talesofshow.com. We'd like to hear them. But we're going to start with the concern of the week this week. Actually, we're going to start by saying, hey, we've got... Oh, you know what? Maybe this should not be back to the spinner. We should maybe start with our concern of the week after I quickly point out that Gray will be back in the future, but he's in the Bahamas right now. Or Bermuda, right? That's what he said, Bermuda.
Bahamas, Bermuda. It's something all some like triangle-shaped area down there. He's never coming back, admit it. He's going to be lost with Amelia Earhart and
enviable at the Captain very Kangaroo. Least. Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to start with the concern of the week this week. And that concern is that this is going to be the last show because CIG is out of money.
Well, I mean, the goons have been saying that for 3 years now. And, I mean, so far, SIG's doing very well of keeping the doors open with no money whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I don't even want – this is a non-story. The only reason I'm mentioning it is because it's worth giving sort of the – if people see it, we don't want the misinformation to get out there. So here's the deal. And you can see it. They've posted an official response to all of this weird stuff. But you may have been seeing some things on various gaming magazines where somebody picked up on the fact that Foundry 42, the UK sub company under CIG, had taken a loan from a bank, by which they interpreted that to mean, oh God, CIG is out of money. They need to take a loan. And it's like, no, banks do not underwrite game development. That's what publishers are for. They're not going to loan you a bunch of money if you tell them, listen, I promise this game's going to sell
it's
big.
It's going to come out just fine.
That's not how banks work. But for the record, what this actually is, it's a situation where the UK government provides a tax credit for game companies that have more than 50% of – that are in the UK that have more – I think it's like more than 50% of their employees are British citizens. And that tax credit comes next year for this year's taxes. So they don't get the money now. They get it later. So they have plenty of money in the U.S. dollars that they've been collecting it in for the most part, because a lot of their customers are in the U.S. But they have to pay their employees in the U.K. in British pounds, and converting that money, you lose some of the value, both in the conversion cost and in the fact that they're worth different values in various places. So the reason for this is they took an advance against the money they're guaranteed to get from the government next year from the bank. And then when the money comes in next year, they'll just pay the bank back. But that way they don't have to convert any of the money over from dollars to British pounds. And the money that they're taking as a loan isn't actually a loan. It's an advance against money that they're already going to get. So there you go. Done and done. We don't need to make anything of it. It's a non-story. Let's move on to some of the cool things that they've been talking about on ATV and on the forums and such.
As opposed to the old man yells at clouds moment we're having here.
Yeah, we don't like those.
No, we do not.
I think we should avoid having those. I mean, think I'm on record for that. So
okay, well, you are now, at least.
I better be. All right, so I think clouds are made of contrails, and those are chemicals. So
Chemtrails.
Nav
and Obama and the deep state are going to get us.
That's true. Nav beacons. They talked about, it's kind of like a throwaway thing. They spent about a minute on it in one of the around the verses, but I thought this was worth some more discussion. So it reminded me a lot of how EVE Online works. For people who didn't catch the around the verse, what they said was you'll be able to essentially drop physical little nav beacons at a point in space that you will always sort of be able to see on your navigation, assuming you're in the solar system. I assume you probably can't jump directly to them from another. Well, no, because you got to use the jump holes. Anyway, the point is you can jump to that nav beacon at any time. And they're also putting in the concept that people could hack it and also be able to see it. Normally, only the person that drops it is able to see it in their navigation system. And presumably you could like share that information with your allies so that they could jump to it as well. That seems to be what it's going to do.
I'm curious. If it is actually a beacon that you put out there and it broadcasts, doesn't that also mean you can discover it if it's not intended for you, if you have to be flying by?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the question, right? How do you, how does this thing broadcast its position without giving away its position? That's the question. I guess you could assume that it's like broadcasting coordinates that are, have to be decrypted.
So, you might know where this beacon is, but can you find the next beacon in this road to find? So, you know, at that point, it becomes like, you know, how complex do you want to make your way in? Because EVE, at least, it was relatively simple. You saved off the coordinates to your ship so that you would jump from gate to gate and never spend time in system where pirates could nab you. And as a former pirate who would nab you, that was exactly what I was hoping you would do.
Right. People just go, they're going to go in a straight line from this gate to either that gate or that gate. Yep. You know, the only two paths they're going to take. So the only way to get around that is clever pilots would travel from one gate to the other, but then like drop a marker, a bookmark at a random place.
Like 500 kilometers beyond the gate to come back in for like 3 seconds. So they couldn't be dropped from that direction. Yeah, there are all kinds of little tricks you would put in there.
Right. Even more complex than that, you drop a marker going from gate to gate. Mm-hmm. Then you drop a marker going between two other random things. Then you go from one bookmark and travel to the other random bookmark and drop a third bookmark. Now you're literally in the middle of two randomly placed bookmarks in space. Nobody else could possibly find you there.
Hopefully.
I mean, they got tracking gear and they can try to scan you down, but they can't just instantly know which way you're traveling. So that's the idea, is you have those set up ahead of time. But in Star Citizen, it's going to be a physical entity that can be destroyed or hacked, which is really interesting.
They'll be destroyed, let's be clear.
They'll be destroyed. And they also mentioned that because it's fucking 900 years in the future, but the batteries are still going to drain. We don't have better solar tech.
No solar panels.
We can't put any solar panels on these things. You have to go back and maintain them. No 0-point energy. I mean, that's just obviously a concession for gameplay and probably just cleanup reasons. You got a million players putting these beacons all over the place and they never go away. That's a lot of database to care about.
It is.
So anyway, I think the implications of that system are very interesting. And it sounded like that was something that's going to be available, at least in the initial stages, in 3.0. Did you get that impression?
I got that, too. It seems like it's already ready and it's there. We don't have anything from the current, like the Evocati testers, so we don't actually know. I mean, I haven't seen a leak about that quite yet.
Mm.
But it sounds like it'll be there day one or close to it. So that will be quite interesting. I'm looking forward to making a, my own golden brick road and then having you follow it.
Yeah, it could have a nuclear battery, right? But apparently, I don't know.
So it'll last for 50 years.
It could last for 100 years. I don't know.
Well, I was thinking going with the Voyager. Yeah, the Voyager battery had like a 50-year span for the RSG.
So anyway, that was really cool. We also know that they're doing Spectrum. Actually, it has been upgraded to 0.35, right?
Yes,
I think it already has.
In fact, 0.35 or 0.36 is live at the moment, according to their site.
And, you know, one of the things that happened there is they added, like, in the settings for it. You can click on settings and go in and just defaults to the way that you view the thread, because there was a vocal minority of people that really didn't like the Reddit threading system, which is just demonstrably wrong. If that's what you think, you're just wrong. And I normally give lots of people the benefit of the doubt, and I'm very like, yeah, you know, whatever, but no, you're just wrong. It's
stop it.
And you know what? I'm going to leave this for after the show, but I have an even worse system I have to get off my chest. But we're going to talk about that later. So the nested versus classic thing, it's going to default, I believe, to nested. And then here's my concern. It's going to sort replies by top. And that's a problem. And I've mentioned that this is a problem on previous shows, but I posted a big thread about it. And my point was this. I clicked on a random thread, and I came in here to look at it. And so this thread was posted originally around midnight, right?
Okay.
And I wanted to see how many of the top posts, because it's sorted by top, how many of the posts that most people are going to see. And this is important because the game is always going, the vast majority of software users are going to use whatever you set for them. 10% are going to go in and change the settings. So the vast majority of people are going to see this forum thread exactly as it is.
Yeah.
So how many top level comments are there within an hour or two of the post? Let's check. One.
All of them.
Two. Three, four, etc. I go all the way down this thing. There was 9 top level posts before we got to one that had been made like 6 hours later. Because if you're looking at it in top, it's always going to sort the highest upvoted post. And those are always going to be one of the first two, because nobody scrolls through and reads every single top comment. They just don't. It's a self-perpetuating cycle, which means the only way to get noticed is to hijack the top comment with your own separate thread. And then you get threading is completely useless at this point, because now everybody's just jumping in and saying whatever they want. And man, they need to add a best mode that sort of gives you waiting to the time. That's all I'm saying.
Best or new. New would also be nice.
I mean, they have new. You can click on new. I just, there, nobody's going to do that. I have no confidence that anybody's going to do that. I don't mind doing it necessarily, but you need a best, which is a combination of new, hot, and top, kind of.
My big problem with it is that the system that Reddit uses has demonstrably been shown to be susceptible to, there's a word for this, not just groupthink, which is, you know, like what's popular, but to concerted efforts to force the dialogue in one direction or another. And if you're ever curious about
botting or
botting or just like large communities all upvoting one comment one of the members made to drive the dialogue that direction. And if you're ever curious about watching that happen, just go to Reddit/r/politics anytime near an American election, and you'll watch a lot. You'll see a lot of things that didn't make news nationally or on any of the major carriers that, you know, Reddit or Reddit users through their infinite wisdom know about Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump, any of the players involved in whatever the election is. Suddenly you're going to find out all kinds of things, such as Hillary Clinton smells of sulfur. So therefore, you know that she must have been ordained by God to have not won the election, right? Because that's the kind of BS you find with this system. Because people will say, oh, I made this post, go upvote it, no matter how idiotic it is, and away it goes.
Yeah, and I mean, that's also certainly vulnerable to professional, like, manipulators, right? Because not only do you have, I mean, we don't want to get into the whole politics of the, you know, Russia interfering in our election thing, but there's certainly a lot of evidence that suggests that that took place.
Yeah.
And, you know, if one of, if you're trying to do that as a foreign power, if you're trying to mess with an election, one of the ways to do that is to like and upvote specific stories you want to use in order to manipulate the election
and manipulate the media.
So, right.
And then
so,
you own the news source for
but even if you created or didn't create it, if you upvote specific things to the exclusion of others, just getting specific information, that's a form of misinformation. It's just a
very much so.
Right. So you could, I mean, there's, we know even outside the realm of politics, there are entire companies that have a farm of, like, people whose only job is to have, like, thousands of accounts that they go and upvote everything with those accounts over and over and over again. And there's only so much that Twitter or Google or Reddit can do to defend against those, because if you have enough manpower and accounts, you can just make them look as real as possible.
And it can look like legitimate traffic. I mean, Twitter, a side story here about this exact issue with the bots. I had a guy I interviewed who had written a algorithm to detect Twitter bots that worked. And you know, he went through the whole thing, and I walked through the logic with him because it was part of his interview to bring him into the company that I was hiring for. And it was fascinating to walk through all of this. And I asked him when he applied it, and he mentioned it different times. So you can do it, but it's very hard to make it look like illegitimate or to determine illegitimate traffic now because of the sophistication level is being used.
And if you don't use bots, you can use a bunch of low paid labor, right? I mean, and it can be very lucrative because there's just outside of the politics realm entirely. If you're looking to try to get people to learn about your product, whatever that is, trying to do it by manipulating social media and making sure your thing shows up, that definitely works. If you're trying to make a viral thing, I mean, how many viral videos turned out to be like crafted, sponsored things by, you know, Toyota or some other company?
A lot of them.
So
and
anyway.
Then now even to bring it back to gaming, Steam is now very susceptible to, you know, to this kind of push from indie developers that are making a product that may not necessarily be the best or be a really good one, but it gets drummed up because, you know, thousands of bot reviewers are leaving reviews for it. And, you know, their response to that is how many items are in the library.
True.
You know, if you ever look at a Steam review now, it says, you know, has in library, you know, 16 items, one item, 427 items. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the way of trying to legitimize the account. And I guess the
true, because any real Steam account that's been around for more than a year has at least 500 things from Steam sales.
Oh, no, the summer sale is going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
Bye.
I said I'm not buying anything. It's too late. I've already bought four things. What the hell am I doing?
I don't believe you.
No, I made a deal with myself. I'm like, I'm only buying something if it's less than $6. And then there were a lot of things on my wish list that were less than $6. Anyway. Getting off track. Point is, yes, I agree that the Reddit style upvoting system is susceptible. How much do we have to worry about that as far as Spectrum is concerned, though? I don't think it's nearly like there's not a huge money making scheme in here unless you get like an entire guild community behind it that's trying to sell you something.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you've got a guild community or another community that has a vested interest either in screwing with the results within, you know, what the developers are going to see or what the community is going to see, or if you have a community that really, you know, the troll aspect of it, you know, tries to spike the development to make it more difficult or harder for the developers, or this is something they're going to roll out elsewhere, and they've got a competing product that they actually are behind. And we've seen that before. You know, look at the Mac versus Windows wars, right? If this kind of system were in place, Windows users or Mac users would have been all over screwing with the other side's development, even though there's really no reason to be vested in either product because the company doesn't care about you user. Yeah. So I don't like it because it's susceptible. Is it really going to make an issue? Maybe, but maybe not. So we don't know yet, and I would urge caution when you're reading the most popular subjects.
Well, yes,
because they may not be popular.
Skepticism of anything you read online is pretty warranted at this point. I mean, one of the things I got to say, one of the things I loved about Reddit is the vast majority of time I look at a headline and I'm like, really? Really? And I click on comments, and the top comment is somebody that's like, said, okay, here's the real story here. And they've got like sourced linked in the bottom. Yes. And it sounds like they've written this out in a technical sounding way. Like, okay, here's an expert on this thing.
Yeah.
And they've taken their time to like, so that's kind of like crowdsourcing your fact checking. And it worked more or less, but the bigger Reddit got, the fewer of those people were able to now, make an impact, unfortunately. And it's still there to some degree or another, especially in smaller subreddits.
Well, and you still find it, but with the concentrated communities that go and they upvote the one guy's comment, and if someone puts a sourced factual article up there, very often those are downvoted to oblivion.
By the people that don't want you. But anyway.
So you still find it.
We're talking about games here, though. Hopefully there's not too much of that. There's not too much incentive. But no matter what, they've built a system with upvotes, but not downvotes, which is one way to help combat this problem.
Yes.
Right? So threads can only be upvoted, which is important. And basically you downvote something by not upvoting it.
no longer is there a disagree button.
Anyway. So Spectrum is making its progress, and that's good to see. And I hope that it's very possible that they have all this knowledge that we're talking about. I'm like, these fools, I can't believe they're not putting in a best as the default. Okay, but that takes time. Maybe they're working on it. Maybe it's on their to-do list, and I'm just sounding like an idiot.
And I look forward to seeing it when it happens.
I hope so. So anyway, the couple of other things that have been happening per the Around the Verse videos, the IFCS is getting a bit of a spit and polish update in the back end. It's not really stuff that we would care about too much as people using the ship. And for those uninformed, the IFCS is it in-flight control system? That essentially transmits what you're putting into the stick or the mouse or the controller and turns it into actual instructions to the computer system that's turning which thruster turns which way and fires at what, you know, percentage.
So when you take your stick and you angle down and you take your thrust and you say go in reverse, those two inputs, you know, might activate 9 or 10 maneuvering thrusters and then turn off the main thruster and that kind of thing. So, or also in actual plane parlance, it's the fly-by-wire system.
Yeah, and you know that stupid thing always confused the hell out of me because, you know, in the olden days when they were piloting like Orville Wright style thing, they were flying with literal wires. Right? They were when they moved a thing, they were physically moving a wire.
Flying by cable.
By cable. Like, I guess that's the difference.
And you know, I've actually seen a boat with the same system, by the way, the pilot by cable. And I kid you not, there was this copper cable in there that was, you know, it's all braided copper, but it was as thick around as my wrist. And I'm staring at this going,
how big
you
a
need
boat?
To maintain that. I mean, it was a boat built in the late 20s. It was like a little like pleasure cruise motor boat. But you get in the wheel and you turn it, and you're literally, when you turn it, you're turning this massive cable. You know, and so you actually have to turn the cable, which turns the rudder, which gets you on the right heading. And so it was amazing to watch because you pop open the little access hatch in the back, and you turn the wheel, and you look back there, and you see the cable sliding around, and there's a little stopper on either end, so you couldn't overturn it and drop the rudder into the water. And hope like hell that doesn't, you know, erode at some point or fall off, because then you're in real trouble.
Yeah. Long story short, I thought fly-by-wire meant fly-by-cable, and I was confused as to how many new things weren't using computers. Anyway.
Yeah.
IFCS is like fly-by-wire.
Wire.
As in a computer is doing most of the work for you. And the main difference here is that they have changed it so it's not sending streams of updates to the game engine. It's now sending batch updates, which apparently solves a major bottleneck, allowing for more players to be in a single instance, which is great. Yeah. That's what we love to hear.
Well, and the good news is, you know, the way they're batching it is things that are independent of each other. So your main thrust updates or your forward thrust updates are no longer are being sent at the same time your lateral thrust updates being sent. And so, you know, among other things, so, you know, they took a problem that was paralyzable and they paralyzed it. So, news.
Parallelized it, I think. Yeah, they didn't paralyze it. Like, your ship's not moving anymore.
Yeah,
why not? Well, we paralyzed it. That's not what I told you to do.
Stop using confuse. Sorry.
Okay. Anyway, the other thing is that the ship stats page is getting an update in the near future. And I have to say, I'm very happy about this because now they talk about the ship stats page. And in that video, they showed like the ship, not the ship matrix, but the thing that you get as a result of clicking on the ship matrix, like the detail page. Like for those watching here, it's like the thing when you click on the Mustang and you can see the details about it. Like, oh, it's got this kinds of thrusters and that kind of slots for the weapons. And it's great if that, with the holoviewer, it's great that that's getting an update. But what I want to get an update is the damn ship matrix, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, I mean,
I hope that's part of it.
They at least have fixed it. I assumed it was. They at least have fixed it so it pulls from the database now instead of his hard-coded HTML.
So it's going to be more updatable for sure.
Yeah.
But, every time they look at this update, thing. It takes forever. We have so many ships now
they
to
need
try
selectors,
to scroll through them.
They need selectors at the top, you know,
and
multi-crew, single seat, that kind of thing.
They need selectors. So you can pick they need the ships. Ability to, like, collapse ships down into their model so that you don't have, like, four different Auroras and four different Vanguards. They should all be, like, you know, just show me the top type, and then I'll look at the submodels after. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. Although
these are, like, paper cuts. Like, who cares about this nonsense? I want the game. But
to be fair, learning this news, I checked out the site and I realized they misspelled Drake.
No.
Yes.
Where?
If you go to the ship matrix and you go to manufacturer and you look at it, it says Drac.
And you go to manufacturer.
So scroll over, look at the manufacturer line.
Oh, you know what? No,
that's Drake ship.
That's on purpose. It's because you see how all these are four letter designations?
Hesperia is way longer.
That's weird because that's always just inconsistent because origin is origin.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
And so I was kidding about that. But yeah, so Drac, you know, it's one letter off, but now they have Hesperia and these other ones that are way longer. So if you scroll over to like the yellow jacket, you can get it all on the same page. And it made me laugh.
So you can see a Drac right next to an Hesperia.
I'm hoping this is part of the facelift is they redo the four letter designation.
Well, you know, what it looks like is that the four letter designation was probably designed to be like sort of looking like a stock trading letters, right?
Yeah, it was like the stock letters. But you know, when you look over at it, you know, they at some point abandoned the four letter thing.
Or I think probably just the person that typed in the Hesperia one
didn't care.
I think that's the case.
Yeah, but I thought that was just funny as hell. I'm like, really? What is going on here?
Yep, that's pretty good.
So hopefully they find that typo and fix it.
So the other thing, man, I never thought I would be so engrossed by a nerd looking at a camera and talking about netcode.
Nerd!
Right? But that's all it was. I was like, by the end, I was like halfway through, I was like, wow, I really like this. But what we're talking about here is the Around the Verse specifically that's about, and you know what? We should have like a new segment. Like if you're going to watch one ATV from the past month, watch this one.
Because I think segment. They have so many ATVs, I can't keep up anymore, and that's driving me up the wall. So
there's
I think
so many,
that's a good
idea. I've actually taken, and I know probably some people know about this, but Relay.sc is an invaluable resource. If you don't want to watch every single ATV, or you want to find out which ones you want to specifically go in and watch, Relay.sc, Relay.sc, these guys go and put a transcript of every single thing that CIG puts out, and Bridger, they put a TLDR at the top.
Bridger, I need you to say that again a little more slowly for me.
Oh, man. Relay.sc.
Oh, baby.
Puts together a transcript, and what's more, they put a TLDR at the top.
That's fantastic. I actually did not know that existed. That is awesome.
I've actually been using this for a little while. I put like $4 a month into their Patreon because I use this on a regular basis.
Spender. No, that makes you a patron of the arts.
That's true.
Use that title.
Oh, yes. There you go. I'm no longer a rear admiral. I'm a patron of the arts. You can tell by my Hamilton t-shirt.
Yes.
My thoughts have been replaced by Hamilton. And it's true. Half the damn time I'm walking around, just can't get the stupid song out of my head. So, sorry, back to Star Citizen. Serialize variables is one of the ATVs you should watch. Even if you skip over the first part and just get to the part where they do the deep dive into the networking stuff, it's super cool. And it's super awesome news. So I don't know what blows my mind more. The fact that they have only 6 netcode programmers on their staff of like 400 or 500, or that only 3 of them are technically working on the netcode and the other 3 are working on the back-end server architecture. And then only like 1 of them is the genius, like crazy. Hang on. Let me do this. Gray sent this to me and I think it sums it up perfectly.
Oh, no.
They're saying the savings are over 80% less data being sent right now. That's bonkers as a starting point. They gave someone with some serious mad scientist level genius control of their netcode. This guy did something genuinely cutting edge. I like the idea of a mad scientist netcode programmer.
I do too, especially because that used to be my nickname when I was at Boeing. But I have a different take on this.
A hot take.
A hot take. They actually are using features available in Amazon's lumberyard for improving netcode and netcode efficiency. Mm-hmm. Things like serializing just variables within an object instead of having to lay the whole object into the serial path and sending the entire chunk. I mean, if you've got, say, an object that's 40 kilobytes in size with all the different variables and the floats and the longs and the shorts and the uints and the ints and the character strings, and you only update one little part of it, and you only send like 5 bytes, along with the object ID, it's 4 bytes, so it's 9, instead of sending all 40. So that right there, you're looking at a 40, you know, a huge, you know, 75% increase in how fast you can do things. If they were finding that most of their updates were tiny, like just the vector position in space for a bullet object, for example, mm-hmm. that would be where you would see these kinds of savings, which is amazing and awesome, and I'm glad it exists. But I'm hopeful that this is a huge part of their lumberyard switchover, mm-hmm. is taking advantage of this.
Yeah, it's really cool. And basically the way that he explained it, and I think one of the coolest parts is that because there's only like the 3 netcode programmers, and being a netcode programmer is one of the hardest kinds of gaming programming you can do. It requires a lot of experience because it's all about being as efficient as possible with your data usage, because the less data you use, the more players you can have and the more stuff you can do with the game.
Yes.
So it's all about being super efficient, and that comes with experience. And they basically tried to make it in such a way that all of the non-netcode programmers could be efficient without needing all the advantage of all that experience. They programmed their own tools, which you might be right, might be part of Lumberyard that they adapted to this. But that allows the regular programmers to program within certain parameters and keep their stuff efficient without needing to get all that experience. They just get it checked by the netcode guys. Really cool stuff. I loved it. It was a great sort of tutorial on what they're doing there. So,
and if you are an up and coming developer or a veteran one who just really wants to get involved in, you know, learning the right way to do things, you know, that particular episode is one to watch, because the little bits of wisdom he sprinkles throughout there are well worth listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And I may even have some of my junior engineers take a look at some of that stuff, you know, coming up, just to give them a little insight into network programming they've never seen, because they're used to high level languages where it doesn't, you know, and, you know, unlimited resources. And then as soon as you start working over, say, a VSAT or some limited pipe of throughput, it matters. It matters a lot. You know, if you only use 8 bytes instead of 40. Yeah. So that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So very cool to hear that they're getting such great savings on that piece. The next update that we saw was the Nox preview, which, if you haven't heard, is a lot like the Dragonfly. It's only like cooler. A ground-based speeder, for all intents and purposes.
Ground,
like,
and space.
Like, if you think the speeder... and space, that's true, if you're using a space suit. But it's a thing that you ride like a bike, like the speeders from Return of the Jedi. If you can picture those flying across the jungle of the forest moon of Endor, then you're thinking of the Nox, essentially. Except it's way cooler because it's black and it's sleek and it's got holograms. Like, it's definitely more
alien.
Futuristic. And it's alien. Yeah, that's right. It's Sheehan technology.
If you're like me and you keep buying the alien ships, and if anyone makes another Buy America, what's the word for it? Your parody about that, I will yell at them.
Buy human.
Buy human, yeah. I love the alien tech because it is so unexpected in its look and feel. And, you know, at least with the AOPA here, it makes me think of Predator. Seriously.
The aliens actually, if you look at the front, it looks like that big rectangular design that they had for the weird speeder in that Rey uses in The Force Awakens. Kind of gave me that vibe to it. Because, I mean, that one is obviously even more exaggerated of a rectangle. But the final thing does have this sort of like flat, thin nose.
Yeah. So, but you know, I was thinking about like the kind of aliens that might ride this thing, and I could see an alien, you know, one of the Predators from the Predator series, you know, mounted on this thing with like some kind of giant lance. So I guess it makes sense for the Vanduul to also be on this, right?
I mean, you know what I noticed looking at this is when you're the Vanduul.
No, the Sheehan. Okay, sorry.
What I'm looking at this, it doesn't look like there's a lot of cushioning, but like all your weight is being supported by your junk. And your chest. That doesn't look right? Isn't that a little weird?
I know they were going
for like the racing mode, but I feel like there should be...
It's like the woman's bike.
I don't know. It's really
the
weird.
The bar is dropped down lower to make sure you don't injure yourself.
I guess so. Yeah. So, yeah, it looks cool. And it might be that because it's alien, that's why it's kind of weird. For us to look at.
They've had a different feel for the alien ships. They've done, you know, SIG has done a really good job about keeping the look and feel for the alien ships alien instead of something you might build if you were human. It doesn't quite meet our aesthetics it meets our aesthetics, but it doesn't meet our design, right? The physiology is just that little bit different to make it interesting.
And it is nice that it is not like the next new ship that we saw was something that we don't really have a role with. Like the only thing we have is the Drake Firefly at this point. And that is specifically more geared towards sort of like cargo transport and scouting. And this one is specifically more geared towards racing and combat, I think is what they said. Speaking of which, I mean, this is clearly a moment where we need to insert the "I love pod racing" sound effect that I was too lazy to go and search out. But it does look like this is going to be an entire other category of racing within Star Citizen is going to be sort of ground-based speeder racing, which is definitely cool. I want to see some jumps and stuff. Like, there's lots of stuff you can do with gravity that you can't do in space.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Are we going to have like an X Games with these? We're going to do like a half pipe?
I want to see a full 1180.
I love it. Anyway, so it's nice to see that we have something sort of like the second speeder / you know, individual bike for space. That now here's the thing: we know this is not going to be able to break out of a gravity well by itself.
True.
You could use it in space if you're out there, but you can't go from space to planet and vice versa with this. It's not strong enough.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd say you either use it on the ground or use it in space, but you're not getting out of gravity well.
That seems fair. That seems like the way that it should be, right? It's kind of small and whatever. Do you think that, what is it, the small ship, the M something that comes out of the constellation?
The M-52?
M-52. Do you think that's capable of going into and out of...
I will say that one's actually questionable whether it can or not. I would say,
I guess the question is, does anybody remember if it has landing gear?
I mean, that's what the
ship
matrix
is for. You know, you
would
need that in space too, wouldn't you? If you just land on a platform at a...
Well, yeah, well, it needs it in space to land on platforms and to land, it doesn't need it to land the constellation, it just docks to that thing. But I would say between the two of them, the M-52 is the one that's much more likely to be able to get into space. From a planet, it depends on how much fuel it has available, really.
I do like they have this this little blurb on the sale page, and it definitely feels like its own separate company. It kind of has the same like BS smell that the Mustang did. If you watch that video, the commercial where the guy just basically said nothing for 3 minutes, we throw out the familiar, and we leave something that was this truly special. And push the envelope. Like, it's just this nonsense. But this one is just actually gives me like a combination of like the faint BS smell from that company. What the hell is it? Something amalgamated, conglomerated. The Mustang from
It's basically the Virgin Interactive of space.
Damn it, I'm losing my street cred at the moment. I don't want to look at the ship matrix. I can figure this out. Consolidated. Something consolidated? Something limited.
I don't know.
Damn it. All right.
MISC? No.
No. It's it's giving me the slight feel of that company, but like also the origin, like speed.
Okay.
What does speed really mean? Because like you lean forward, I remember that. Settle into the contoured form of
those
the
Knox. Those were awesome commercials. Those were awesome videos.
Yeah, we haven't had one of those in a long time.
We haven't. Sad. I need one.
I want like a Hull listening. C. Like I know they did the freelancer pickup truck trucker kind of thing, but I want the Hull C. I want it to be just the most boring like. That you'd put in a boardroom, like, yeah, as you can see, the efficiency records of the Hull C are vastly superior.
The Hull C needs to start out that way and then slowly move into, we got a trucking convoy flying through the night.
Yeah, that would work.
Yep, that would be well worthwhile.
Consolidated Outland. I knew it was consolidated something.
Outland.
You know what? They're so forgettable. Everybody just knows that they make the Mustang. That's it.
No one's allowed to use the word Outland since Sean Connery nailed it in that movie in like 1986.
Okay.
If you've not seen Outland, go see it. If you want to see Sean Connery arresting hookers on Jupiter or one of Jupiter's moons, it's worth it.
Have you ever heard the fan theory that The Rock is really just like Sean Connery is still James Bond?
I hope not. Sean Connery is a much better actor.
Yeah, but yeah. I think that makes that movie way cooler.
That's fair. It does make it way cooler. If you go in with that mindset, it probably is going to be cooler, but only because of Sean Connery.
Yes, that's true. All right, so anyway, we got the Knox. The Knox is cool. Pod racing is cool. The last piece that I saw in the last month or so that was really interesting is the same episode actually that the Knox came out, was the solar system editor, where they were like, we can just do a few clicks and we have an entire solar system set up. And I was like, seems like that should be only a few clicks. But then they demonstrated their process and it was like, wow, that is mind-boggling. Cool. But the cool things that we learned
it's
from
a good tool.
Space be crazy, which is interesting. They talked about how they have an entire, like there's apparently a resource of scientists that are like on this big, I don't know if it's a mailing list or a forum or something that movie producers and, any kind of writers or anybody else can just consult, because these are scientists and people involved in fields of engineering and things that are like, I'm tired of seeing things that are completely unrealistic in my media. Just come ask me before you make your stupid movie. And I'll tell you why that can't work. And I'll give you a cooler idea for that scene.
It will be better, I promise.
So these are the people that Star Citizen is talking with. They're talking with these consultants, specifically the astrophysicists, about, solar systems and how to make variety in their galaxy, right? You can't just have everything be, it's pretty much like our solar system. That's it. The solar system. You want cool things. Like they said, there's a gas giant. This is real, apparently. There is a gas giant that is entirely charcoal black.
Because it's solid carbon?
I think it's because it's got carbon in the atmosphere. Something like that. Yeah, it's something ridiculous.
I had heard about that. It was it one of the exoplanets? It was orbiting Gliese?
I don't know the details, but they did mention it. And that's we stole that idea. And so you'll have cool things like that in the solar system. Solar system refers to the system around Sol, so I meant to say star system. Yes, try to get my terminology correct.
I forgive you, though chat will not.
Of course not. So I think that's cool stuff. So space be crazy. The other thing is we basically have a confirmation that everything in Star Citizen is essentially going to be at a 1/10 scale, which is bigger than I might have thought.
Yeah,
because space is also huge. 1/10 scale is pretty damn big for space. So
1/10 of infinity is
1/10 of infinity. And to that effect, we now have a pretty solid understanding that quantum travel will be about 10% of the speed of light. So that kind of keeps it in line with the scale, doesn't it?
It does. It, you know, you're not going light speed. You're going 1/10 light speed to get to 1/10 distances.
Yeah.
So it's still going to take you about 7 seconds to go from the sun to Earth. Or 8 seconds, I guess, depending on where you're at.
No, 8 seconds is full light speed. No, 8 minutes. Jesus.
8 minutes. Listen, yeah, you're right.
Eight minutes
to go from the sun to Earth.
So 10%. But it's still going to take 8 minutes to go from the sun to Earth at quantum travel. Scale. Is that true? I don't think that sounds wrong. Because they said specifically we're shrinking the size in order to make things work
faster.
Faster.
So you'll be going 1/10 real light speed to reach 1/10 scaled distance.
That's it. Okay. Yes.
There you go.
Got it.
All right. So it goes from 8 minutes down to what,
a lot
24
less than
seconds
8 minutes.
Or somewhere in there.
Right. Yep. And they talked about how, you know, these moons and these things, like, it takes hundreds of hours to, like, go around these moons if you're actually looking at them in the right size. The other thing they pointed out is that quantum travel will only ever be in a straight line, both for lore and gameplay reasons. So you don't have to ever consider that in the future, which is good. And I thought that was just an important detail to remember. Like, if any time in the future we're having one of these conversations, like, do you think we'll ever turn in quantum travel? No, because back in episode number X of ATV...
So. I just feel it's unfortunate they missed the opportunity to set the quantum speed to 88 miles per hour.
That's very low.
I want you to think about that for a second. Think of Michael J. Fox.
I know where you're coming from. I just don't know why that would fit.
It wouldn't at all, but I'm saying
how about we
fun.
Use like 88? You know, they said they talked about
88C.
Well, yes, exactly. In the video about the soul editor and things like that. Here's the thing they talked about is that you use the term AU, astronomical unit, to talk about large distances. Specifically, the astronomical unit is the average distance between the Earth and the sun. So you use something like 50 A, like our solar system is about 50 AU in radius or diameter, something like that. And I was, because they said the reason you don't want to, you know, use kilometers for everything. But I'm like, how about we invent like megameters? Like, we have a thing that goes bigger than this, right? We have, you know, kilo, mega, giga, tera. Why don't we use terameters?
Okay.
I want to start this movement. Let's use gigameters. Like, just go up orders of magnitude until
we
get to
use, and I'm stealing from the Martian here, we use ninja pirate units. Space is exactly 75 ninja pirates in size.
All of space.
Correct.
Is it a volumetric?
It is now.
It's all.
So
it's all things.
For reference, the radius of the solar system is a whopping 30.38 AU.
So I think they were including the Oort cloud and everything in it out to like the edge of the solar system. Yes. So it's probably that's where they're getting the 50 number. But yeah, probably out to about Pluto-ish is probably 30. Yeah.
So we can... I think Neptune, by the way.
Neptune.
And
okay.
I think we can actually get a better unit in here straight from Spaceballs, the plaid sec.
Okay. That'll do it for this week on Tales of Citizens. No, not
Tales
yet.
Of Citizens, 80s humor.
We got a couple of things. We moved the Life in the Verse segment to the end of the show because I know not everybody's interested in it. So let's talk about some stuff that's been going on with us
about our lives
recently. Specifically, I mentioned something about forums, right? You know, I'm bringing this back up because I don't know if there's anybody else out there that plays...
You're the only one.
War games. Tabletop war games.
Well, you and me, I guess.
Because I am apparently a 60-year-old man, because that's the only other people that I see playing these things. But...
No.
I know. It's not just them.
This is actually a weird kind of social meme going through the society of nerddom right now, and I include us in that. But a bunch of the engineers in my office have recently started doing... Dungeons and Dragons after hours in the conference room we have there. And then a lot of them have gotten into a couple of different war games, although not ones I would actually want to play.
Such as?
Warhammer 40K and Warhammer Fantasy Battle.
Those are not war games. Those are tabletop miniatures games. I'm talking about war games. Hex and Counter, mother.
Oh, like old school Battletech.
Like Avalon Hill type, yes.
Okay. I'm with you.
Right?
I'm with you.
Like the stuff that D&D grew out of. So, I mean, obviously these days it's not necessarily Hex Encounter. Sometimes it's block war games, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But the reason I bring all this up is because I'd like to introduce you to Con Sim World. Because war games are also sometimes referred to as conflict simulations, right? For the sort of, we want to make as much realism as possible to put ourselves in the actual general chair and see what would have happened in this battle if I was in charge, right?
Okay.
Okay, it's not a bad website, right? It's not great.
I mean, I'm going to go with it is a bad website.
Okay, it's a bad website, but it's not awful. But I will show you the awful. They hid all of the awful in this button here called forum. It's not a forum. It's a big room where everybody's yelling at the same goram time. So,
perfect.
I'm just going to drill down here. They've got a bunch of different sub forums. So we're going to click on board games. We'll take us to an individual game. Let's just go to one that I'm familiar with, here to here. And then we'll just look up Axis and Allies, right? Everybody knows about Axis and Allies. Let's just click on this. I always
like the nuclear simulation rule.
Or, yeah, let's just click on that here.
Did you hear about the Axis and Allies nuclear sim rule?
No.
It actually made it to Steve Jackson's Murphy's Rules publication, which was a little magazine dedicated to the what the fuck nature of board game rules, and it was in their old rule book to simulate the use of tactical nuclear weapons in Axis and Allies. Simply soak the map in lighter fluid and
fly. Is that all you have to do? Okay,
that was it. That was the one step.
So this is the quote unquote forum.
Yep.
For this individual game, it is just a conversation sorted by date. There's no threading at all. As bad as Spectrum is, it will always, always be better than ConSim World because people are constant. It's just instead of like a bunch of different conference rooms where one over here is talking about a given topic and then somebody opens a new room and says, I want to talk about this. This is a giant concert hall where everybody in it is just shouting. And sometimes you'll be shouting to that guy over there and it doesn't matter if that's the guy you're talking to. The people over here are going to hear you. You could just go back forever, back and back and back and back. And it's just older and older pieces of this one running conversation. It is the worst type of communication I have ever seen, and they refuse to change it. They've had this for like 15 years, and this is why I say they're old geezers, because they're resistant to change. I like it the way it is. No, you're wrong. You're just wrong. Threaded forums are better.
I can't follow what's going on in a couple of these I just took a glance at, so this is not good. So what I hear is you're giving yourself an aneurysm by going to the forum.
I don't ever go to this website, but some designers refuse to use Board Game Geek, which uses actual normal threaded freaking forums.
It sure does.
And when I'm saying threaded, I don't mean like the threaded, like the whole thing about on the Spectrum where they were trying to be like, oh, the threaded comments are bad. Like, no, I don't care about threaded comments. Like, I just want the actual forum threads, the individual
classic forum viewing models.
Yes, I just want to be able to see things shuffled into categories to make them easy to understand and consume, not just a giant, you can't even search this thing. It's
Bridger, I think I know who's to blame for this.
Obama? Oh. Wait, what? I didn't hear what you said. I was too busy.
Millennials.
Oh, millennials.
Millennials. They've got this whole schizophrenic hodgepodge of a mind. Seems unlikely.
Seems unlikely. Okay, so I've been playing a lot of war games. So that's what I've been doing, including Hearts of Iron 4. You can see some of those videos on my channel if you're interested in checking that out again. What have you been up to, Callie?
MechWarrior Online to an unhealthy amount because I've been enjoying the hell out of the skill tree and the updates that they've made, and the rebalancing between the mechs seems much, much better than it used to be. And then to dovetail along with this, and Bridger's newfound love of wargaming, Battletech.
Tabletop, right? Tabletop?
Yes, Battletech. So I've not been playing with that, but I have been playing with BattleTech, the turn-based recreation of the tabletop game, because Catalyst Labs, in their infinite wisdom, will not get off their ass and reprint the starter boxes for BattleTech so I can buy one. Yeah. I have all the old cardboard cutout stuff in my garage somewhere, and I have no interest in digging that out. It's worth my time to buy a box. So other than that, RimWorld Alpha 17. If you've not tried out RimWorld yet, think of it as the early access game you should have bought five fucking years ago.
It's surprisingly addictive. It's amazing. And surprisingly, you're going to get a lot of time out of it if it's your kind of game. I've put a lot of time into it already.
Yeah.
I know my wife has hundreds
of hours into it. It's amazing. And then beyond that, my daughter had, I might mention this last time, my daughter has gotten old enough now to enjoy Pokemon in all of its glory, including the tabletop card game and the Sun and Moon 3DS. So we play those together, and I am the oldest man in the room when we do so. So there you go. It's been a good time learning all about the Pokemon creatures I avoided like the plague growing up and wish I still could.
Hey, you know, those teach a lot of math skills to kids because they're constantly doing adding and subtracting numbers to figure out how much damage was done. And that really, really helps. Just it's all about repetition when it comes to early math and like memorizing like how to easily subtract and add things. Yeah.
She can add by tens instantly now. You know, your drift limb just took 30 damage. Tick, tick, tick. Okay, away we go. She's very good at she's getting much better about that. I'm not saying it doesn't help. I mean, when I was her age, I was big into D&D and rolling dice and adding them together and seeing what's going on. And my parents were convinced that I was a Satan worshiper, and they weren't wrong, but that's a separate issue. And bearing in mind that, you know, she is six. So it's interesting.
It's going to continue to help, I'm sure.
Hopefully I can get her into Magic the Gathering, then we can have some real fun.
Yeah, if you ever get in a situation where you want to find out if there's any other D&D nerds in the room, just ask somebody to add like 7 to a random number between 1 and 20. And maybe you'll get like, what's 8 plus 7? Oh, 15. Oh, okay, there you go. That's the guy. He figured it out instantly.
See, I learned all that from BattleTech, adding the two dice together and all the LRM hits and whatnot, and looking at tables. Oh my God, the tables. It's been so long. I need to get back into that.
So I will make one recommendation here, and I don't know. This is probably something that plenty of people have heard about before, but the McElroy brothers, the people that do the podcast My Brother and Me, amongst others, they also do a podcast called The Adventure Zone, which is a well-edited D&D session with charismatic individuals that make lots of funny jokes. So unlike many other D&D session podcasts, this one is well-edited and – it's funny.
You don't want to see my beer gut and off-color jokes? Come on.
No, apparently not. But there's also a lot out there that suck, is my point. And that aren't edited. And you have to edit them most of the time. But the thing about this is, it's three brothers and their father. And one of the brothers is the DM. And the dad is like playing along and he likes doing it, whatever. But the thing is, I don't know if it's purposefully because it's a funny running joke, but at some point he rolled a D12 instead of his D20. And it was like some critical roll. And then one of the brothers is in the room with him. And he's like, Dad, that's a D12. And so they're like, oh man, he gets to roll it again. Oh good. We screwed up. Let's try it again. And he still got like an 11 or something. But the thing is, in this thing, he knows less about how to play D&D like 17 episodes in. It's ridiculous. He's like, what do I roll? A D20, Dad. It's always a D20. That's a D12.
I do have an easier way to tell if there's any old school D&D nerds in a room. You just say one word. Thaco.
Oh, Thaco.
Oh, my God.
Thaco. That required a lot of real math. Back in my day, we had to do real maths to play D&D. You had to add and subtract. And you were trying to get 0, not 20.
I had honestly forgotten some of the details of how it worked, but I'll never forget the little acronym there for 2-hit armor class 0.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. So
it's amazing, and if you don't know what it is, go look it up and then just wonder how we ever made it out of puberty.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very poorly designed mechanic as far as, like, that's what the whole D20 thing took the world by storm because it was so Goram simple. It's like, roll this die, add one number to it. Boom, done. And people were like, my God, it's beautiful. All right.
Carnifex 2005 in the YouTube chat is confused that they lost Thaco.
Yes, Thaco's been gone since about 15 years.
So there you go.
Second edition was probably the last thing to use Thaco. I don't know, actually. I didn't jump on until 3.5. So I couldn't even tell
Thaco was not in third edition. And actually, AD&D was really the last version I played.
Really? Because fifth edition is very good.
I've heard many good things of many different versions. The last actual RPG I played was 12 years ago, the very first reprint of Shadowrun.
So here's the question. Are you familiar with the Redwall books?
The little animals that run around and kill shit? So I know of them, but I've never read them.
So they're like, basically, they're little adventure books for kids, right? They're like Lord of the Rings, but with little like mice and rodents and things like that, and rabbits. And so it's very appealing to kids. A lot of people read them when they were kids. So here's what you got to do. You get your daughter into Redwall when she's old enough for it. And then you buy an RPG called Mouse Guard. Because Mouse Guard is an RPG that takes place in what is essentially a Redwall type setting, where all the characters are mice and they're fighting, and it's like just like a fantasy style RPG where you have like, well, not just like, but it's a similar to that kind of a universe where you got swords and shields and, you know, fighting and dueling and trying to persuade somebody. No Thaco. But this one in general, actually, Mouse Guard comes in a box and it has like cards. That, so it's like a simplified thing. I haven't actually played it myself, but it's made by some of the designers behind Burning Wheel.
When would the Redwall books be appropriate for a child?
I don't know.
I was about to start reading her The Hobbit.
Hobbit's probably good to read to her, yeah.
Well, I had The Hobbit read to me when I was 5. So,
what is the best order to read the Redwall series? What is the reading level for the Harry Potter books? That's not what I was asking Google.
At all.
Fail. You lose. Good day, sir.
Let's see. Ages 9 to 12. Okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, for them to read it, but for you to read it to them.
Might be a little earlier.
Yeah, let's see.
I guess it really determines like how much actual like...
Oh my God, I forgot how much I hate parents. And I am a parent.
You found some comments?
Well, the first one on here, right? Parent of a 7-year-old. About the very first Redwall book. I'm going to quote here. This book is creepy and violent.
What?
Well, I got bad news.
I mean, it's like the cats are... I don't remember... I didn't actually read these myself, but I remember kind of learning about them at some point tangentially, because I think my wife read them when she was a kid. And it's like there's like a cat that is like trying to take over the community and the mice are trying to rally, but the cats are bigger. So they they're basically fascists. Yeah. Or something. Yeah. I don't know. There may be a little bit political thing going on there. I'm not sure.
I'm with you, but the parent that wrote that sentence is the same parent that made YouTube's current revenue model suck.
Ah, I
can't
see.
Have you cursing. Well, here's news. It's on you as the parent to make sure your child does not, you know, see or hear things you don't want them to.
YouTube offers parental controls, doesn't it?
They do. They do. And then, you know, that's what... But right now, like, if you have too much cursing in an episode of anything, you can't turn it into a revenue stream. And I don't even use this as a revenue stream. I just do this for fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't really impact me, but it still annoys me. And then also, by the way, too much violence in the Redwall series.
I don't know about that. I can't speak to it, but I know that there's like sword play. So maybe there's somebody that gets stabbed. I don't know.
I doubt they're going through. Oh, and he ran him through, and then, you know.
There was blood gushing.
Let's put it this way.
From the rivers ran red.
There is less graphic description of gore in these books than in the Bible, who they no doubt would have me read to my child.
Yeah, there's some problems with that. All right, before we get in trouble with the religious pieces of our audience, let's just call it a day, shall we?
I knew I would get your dander up with that one.
Yeah, well, okay.
I know. I made no comment about the Bible. Other than that, it has some very interesting descriptions of, you know, people.
And graphic scenes. So, I love pod racing. I'm Bridger.
I love pod racing.
And this Nox ad has been approved by...
During this show, I actually bought a Nox Silver. The
You held yourself off from the Steam sales just for that, huh?
I've not bothered with the Steam sale yet. I should really look up what's going on in there.
But oh, yep. No, you can't do it. Don't do it. All right, guys. I am Bridger. Gray will be back next week. We'll see you hopefully to talk about 3.0.
No, that'd be nice.
Actually, we actually don't have much of a post show because we just spent it all talking about other things.
Yeah, I mean, that literally is now the around.
I meant to do the post show when we finished with the Star Citizen stuff, but I forgot to put in the music, and so now we've done it already.
Speaking of tabletop, by the way, Tabletop Simulator is one of the Steam sale games recommended to me. I know, it's on sale for $10.
How much? $10. That's tempting, but I gotta... I just have to figure out...
Come on,
like,
you know
when
you
would
to.
I use it? Obviously, you have to use it with
Whenever
someone else.
Play board games with Gray. And then buy two copies, send one to him.
No, that's too much money.
And then Master of Orion, apparently, the wargaming game is on sale. But you know what? I can never buy it. I don't trust wargaming to correctly make a solitaire. So... And I say this as someone who loves World of Warships, but I've seen the balance hit that the paid tanks and World of War tanks have taken, and I just can't.
Yeah. So Warships is going the same way, you're saying?
I'm suspicious it will at one point here, but it hasn't yet. But yeah, ever since they did that Super Bowl commercial, the World of Tanks has been getting worse and worse with the paid tank balance.
I do appreciate the. The extra credits episodes that they're sponsoring.
Okay.
They sponsor them to do some World War II based episodes that are really cool. The Hunt for the Bismarck one specifically was sponsored by them to try to promote their World of Warships. And it's like, okay, I'm glad this content exists now because it's a pretty cool story about the Bismarck.
But at the same time, I'm not buying your goddamn games.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I know that if Piranha were bigger, they would be the same way. But at the same time, they're not bigger and they don't pull that shit. So the big complaint people have about Piranha is they don't listen enough to people to complain in the forums. And you know what?
Usually the problem is they listen too much to people that complain in the forums.
Well, exactly. So it's, you know, you're damned if you do, is what I mean. If you're a game developer. Oh, Naval Actions on sale.
Ooh, I've been thinking about
that. Oh, goodness. It's on sale for $26.99.
It's still in early access, though. I think I've been waiting
on
that.
But still, it's way down. It's been in early access for a while.
I kind of need to look at some more recent gameplay footage to see what I think. Because, man, look at the freaking reviews are in
there.
No,
mixed. Overall and recent are mixed. And I think it's because there is no help in that game.
Ah. Yeah, I have such a low tolerance.
There is no aiming help. There is no sailing help. There is nothing.
So this isn't what was that? Shit. Let me find it. Guns of Icarus, but for realistic naval warfare?
Yes, yeah.
Because Guns of Icarus is tons of fun. I haven't played it in a long time, though. I don't know what they've done with it. I know that they put out some big new, like, co-op adventure mode.
There was, like, the Guns of Icarus Community War or something like that. I can't remember what it was called. But, yeah, there was that one as well. Store... Let me look for it here. Guns of Icarus.
Among the Barren Wastes.
Guns of Icarus Alliance.
Alliance, yeah, that's the upgrade that has like a big campaign that you can play co-op. It was actually one of their stretch goals that they never made back when it was a Kickstarter.
For the first one. But Guns of Icarus came out 5 years ago?
Wow.
Holy crap.
It entered early access 5 years ago.
Oh, and Guns of Icarus Alliance and the DLC is all on sale right now.
Where is... I don't see the...
Guns of Icarus
DLC.
Alliance.
Oh, there it is, actually. Upgrade to Guns of Icarus.
Yeah, the DLC is the soundtrack and then the costume pack. So,
actually, because I own Guns of Icarus, I get an additional 25% off of Guns of Icarus Alliance, apparently.
Oh, do you? I own Guns of Icarus. I don't see that.
I'm looking in my... Guns of Icarus Online store page, just the main one.
Oh,
upgrade to Guns of Icarus Alliance and save 25% as owners of Guns of Icarus Online for a limited time.
Or you can save 50%.
Or you can save 50%. Oh, offer ends May 30th. That was a while ago.
Whoops.
Woo! Update your store page. But,
items. Hold on. Do I already own this and didn't know it?
You bought Alliance and you didn't know?
No, that's why I'm confused.
Oh, I put it in cart by accident.
Oh, purchase Guns of Icarus Alliance and receive a free copy of the original game. Okay. If you buy the Alliance, you get the old one free. That's what I was being thrown by.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I already own it, and I'm not going to get another copy of Guns of Icarus Online. But you know what? Here we go, people.
Crossout.
Just to somebody show my support, I am buying Alliance right now.
What is Crossout?
Crossout.
They said it's like World of Tanks, but meets Mad Max. I am intrigued.
I'm in love in that case. Crossout action.
Doesn't have great
I have
reviews
seen
right now, but is it in early access? No, it's been released.
Blitz, the streamer, he was playing this. I saw this. It's done by Gaijin, the guys that did War Thunder.
Ah.
Yeah. And yes, it was very much a game in which you had Mad Max and trucks running each other down, and yeah.
That's a cool idea.
One thing that did go on sale in the summer Steam sale that I did buy, Shadows of Mordor.
Oh, that's a fun game. If you don't have that, get it.
I've never played it, and I did buy it. I'm going to enjoy it. 42 gigs to download, though.
It is
huge. It was
right
up there competing with Star Citizen. I don't even know the first thing about the game, but I heard so many good things, I had to buy it.
Yeah.
Is it a strategy game? Is it an RPG? I don't know.
No. Did you ever play the Batman Arkham Asylum, Arkham City games?
Not even a little bit.
What about Assassin's Creed?
No.
Oh. Well, okay. You're going to enjoy. Here's what you got to do.
Yeah.
If you enjoy Shadow of Mordor, the combat system is like the Batman games, but it's slightly easier in some ways.
Right.
And the Batman system is one of my favorites because goddamn does it make you feel like you're Batman. It's such a cool feeling when you master it. It's all about timing. Okay. It's a game that's everything is about timing. You got to time things perfectly. You got to pick the correct counter, but then it scores you based on versatility. So like, yeah, you could do exactly the same thing over and over again, but you want to instead like use your bat claw to grab somebody, pull them towards you, punch them in the face as they get to you. And then you want to jump up and use a batarang to knock that guy away, kick that guy in the face. Like you want to do a big variety of things because it looks way cooler than if you just punch, 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 punch. But then various enemies essentially become immune because they have like heavy armor. They have this or have that. And you have to do different things to deal with them. Or this guy's got like an electric bar.
So, yeah,
like that prison guards would use or something. So you have to deal with, this combination of bad guys, I'm going to have to use different tactics. But in Shadow of Mordor, it's the same basic system where you're going to be fighting a bunch of guys all around you at the same time. And you have to properly counter the ones that are about to hit you and finish off the ones that you can before they get back up. Like properly finishing one off really relieves the pressure, but it slows you down while you're doing it. So you have to like knock everybody else away just long enough to kill this one guy and knowing when to do that and when not to do it. It's a fun system to enjoy. I particularly like the story a lot and the nemesis system. You're telling me you don't know anything about the nemesis system?
Nope, not a thing.
Okay, this is the coolest part of the game. This is the one they advertise, so I'm surprised you didn't hear about this, right? If you ever
was neck deep in work at the time, so I'm not surprised.
So for you or for anybody else that doesn't know, the way that this game works is you are playing as a ranger in Mordor on the borders, specifically at the Black Gate, before the timeline of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. So if you recall within the books, you'll read that the Black Gate and Minas Morgul, those were all settlements built by the Numenoreans, the humans, the first men, and those were designed to keep evil out of Mordor because they knew it would try to come back. They knew that Sauron wasn't defeated in the Great War that you see at the very, very beginning of the movie. So they built these fortresses and they manned them for like almost 1,000 years. But eventually the strength of men failed, as it does. And then you get the Lord of the Rings where they take it back over. And this is the story of what happens to a ranger who is manning that fortress when it gets taken over by the orcs that are now working for Sauron. And the ranger, essentially, they're trying to summon some old elf. And this is all happens within the very beginning. I'm not spoiling anything. I'm not going to tell you any of the details about who this elf is, because that comes later. But this ancient spirit of one of the elves that was from a long time ago, this elven hero, they're trying to do a ritual that conjures him up. Instead, something goes wrong. When they're killing the hero to do the blood ritual, they accidentally fuse the elf spirit, or something happens that fuses the elf spirit with the ranger. So now they're like two people in sharing a body. And it's and because the elf is a spirit, because of the magic, you can't die. If you die, you're just resurrected. The elf brings you back to life. And you continue on. You continue the fight. So you're this, like, stalking thing that can't die. And you'll hear the orcs, like, overhear them talking about, did you hear about the ranger? They say he comes at night. Like, they're just, you're just like this fucking boogeyman to these orcs as you're fighting your way through Mordor. And you die, you just come back. So that's a great way to have your... But the thing is, death changes the world. When you die, the orc that kills you gets promoted, and like he gets stronger, and becomes like a war chief, and gets new special powers. And if you go up against a war chief and lose, he gets promoted. And if you like set him on fire last time and he didn't die, he'll come back with burn scars and he'll remember you.
Oh, boy.
And he's like, ain't no campfires around here, ranger, right? And you can use their weaknesses and strengths against them. Like you have to hunt down lesser orcs that will tell you that so-and-so is afraid of fire or that so-and-so is weak to arrows. And you can use that against them. And they'll come in, the bigger, more powerful bosses will travel with their like hordes around them. And you'll have to, all the missions sort of take place in this system. And the nemesis system is like, these guys remember you from past encounters. They level up. They get stronger when they kill you and they get promoted. And that's such a cool thing, because at the end of any other game level where you lose to a boss, you're like, fuck, now I got to do it again. And now instead you're like, that motherfucker, I'm gonna get him next time. And you can get into this thing where you're like, I'm going to kill that guy. Even if you don't need to. Like, the story's over here. The game's like, come on, this way. And you're like, no, that guy killed me. I have to kill him. It's my destiny. And you're just making him stronger every time you fail. And then, of course, you get stronger over the course of the game, where you can level up and do perks and things like that. And you can come back later and be like, it's revenge time, buddy. The Ghost Range is back. It's such a cool thing.
It sounds pretty amazing.
So yeah, I definitely recommend that game, especially at that price point. It's a little bit weaker on the combat side, I think, than the Batman games. But if you like that style of combat, if you enjoyed playing the game, the actual combat, which I certainly did, definitely, dude, pick up the Arkham games. Okay. Arkham Asylum and Arkham City are two of my favorite single-player games in the past, like, 5 or 6 years. I don't know, maybe it's a little older than that for Arkham Asylum, but especially if you grew up watching the Batman the Animated Series.
I did not.
Okay, well, it's awesome because Kevin Conroy voices Batman, and he was the voice from that series, and you also have Mark Hamill as the Joker, and goddamn, that's the best Joker. And the stories in this are fantastic. In those games are fantastic, too. But I just love, like, dropping in to a group of hooligans that are, like, beating up an old lady, and, like, there's literally, like, juiced up, like, steroid, like, gang members, and they're all like, it's the Bat! And then you just beat the crap out of them. It's so much fun. And then it rates you at the end and says, you did it perfectly without breaking a stride, so you get a bunch of bonus points, you know, or you had a 5x combo and then you dropped it, and so you get this many points, and then you use this much variety, you get that many points. that there's just there, and you started it by like flying from above them and like jumping on top of one and giving an insta kill, and like just the whole thing. I love it. That game is fantastic. Arkham City is one of my favorite of that entire system. Anybody who says that Assassin's Creed is a better system, GTFO, get out of here. The Batman games are the best version of that system. Period.
Fair enough.
And
I will check it out.
If you still like it, the Mad Max game that's on Steam is also a fairly good version of that system. It does get a bit repetitive, which is why with all of these systems, if you just stick to the main quest, you'll probably be okay. You'll want to do these side quests, but then you'll be bored with the game.
Mm.
So that's my suggestion.
Mad Max, I looked at. I mean, it didn't sound as interesting as the medieval graveyard simulator.
Mad Max is $8 right now. The thing that Mad Max adds to this system, it's got the fighting system that's kind of like the Batman / Assassin's Creed / Shadows of Mordor system. It's a little bit weaker in that vein, but it's got the car combat that is super cool. Yeah. The car combat is amazing. Now I'm making myself want to go back and replay it, even though I did get a little bit repetitive by the end. It was such a cool atmosphere. The atmosphere of all three of these games, the Batman games, the Mad Max game, and the Shadow of Mordor game, despite the fact that they're all by different developers, like they've all nailed the atmosphere of those games really, really well.
Okay.
Actually, what was Shadow of Mordor? Is that a WB? No, it wasn't a WB production. Mordor. I typed in Mordor. Shadow of Mordor. Not going to find it there.
Yeah, so I may skip on Mad Max because of the third-party DRM stuff. I've had enough of that.
Does it have that?
It does. De novo anti-tamper.
Yeah, I remember that being a thing that came up. Oh, I'm sorry. The Mad Max one is Warner Brothers Interactive Entertainment. It's Avalanche Studios. And it is the same people that did Shadow of Mordor, I think.
Oh, okay. So I can look forward to Monolith, a Mad Max.
It's different. Monolith is who did Shadow. Avalanche did. It's under the same publisher.
Oh, got it.
WB Games published both of them, the developer's different. So maybe they use a similar engine, basically.
Okay.
Yes. So play through Shadow of Mordor. We need to get your review when you get back on the next show.
I will definitely give it to you. I will give it a good playthrough. I get about 40 minutes a night in. Hopefully that's enough.
Yeah, it should be fine. All right, guys. Thanks for listening to us ramble here at the end.
Thank you all.
If you're still here, you get a cookie.
Other games? Yeah, if you're still here, what's wrong with you?
Sure. All right. Have a good one, everyone.
All right. Thank you all.